Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you to today's program of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes. I'm the host of this show and also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network. And I want to remind you that we have several other shows, and we are launching a new show, and I'll get to that here shortly. But our other shows that we have on air each week are Parenting Aces with Lisa Goodman Stone, and Lisa operates out of Atlanta, Georgia. And she comes on Tuesday mornings at 10:30 Central Standard Time. We have American Tennis with Chuck Creasy, and Chuck comes on the air on Wednesdays before I hit the airwaves, and he talks about college tennis. He talks about American tennis, just tennis in general, and we always love his perspective on things. And we have my show, a little bitty thing that talks about college tennis in America and what's going on with it. And we bring you some of the great coaches, the great players, and great stories that are involved with the college tennis on a year-in, year-out basis. We have the Florida High School Tennis Coaches Association perspective, which comes on Thursdays at 5:30 Central Standard Time. And excited for John Denise to be a part of our network. I want to let you know that we're going to be adding a show. And this person comes to us. We had him on the air a couple of weeks ago, but this is Dr. Steve Clark. And just want to let you know a little bit about Steve when he comes on the air in the future, so you've got an idea of what you'll be listening to. But he has over 25 years of collegiate coaching experience, and his teams have been ranked as high as number 16 in the NCAA, with former top five players, or players in the top five, and former players to try to compete on the ATP Tour. Coach Clark looks to engage his guests and listeners in an array of topics ranging from momentum management to play point management, from elite coaches and players as guests to the mechanics, tactics, and sports psychology for the determined club player, and beyond the normal discussions often around tennis. Dr. Clark plans on entertaining topics as wide as collegiate recruiting, team promotion, fan building for coaches, topics for parents-coach dynamic. Since Coach Clark has a PhD and numerous other degrees, and he's also a former NCAA All-American, he understands and has a deep concern for the academic, personal, and athletic development of players and students. Now, I want to remind you that Coach Clark's show begins June 23rd, and he's got Wayne Bryant lined up as his guest. Wayne, if you recall, wrote the book Raising Your Child to Be a Champion in Athletics, Arts, and Academics, and they're going to be discussing that book, amongst other things. Some of the other guests that Steve has lined up, besides Wayne Bryan, Dick Gould, legendary Stanford coach Roy Emerson, Grand Slam legend, Paul Goldstein, Lily Farood of Stanford, Steve Johnson, the father and coach of player Stevie Johnson, Alan Fox, Manny Diaz, Trevor Cronenman, David Fish, John Hammermeister, and Carol Wayman, who's the director of the Little Mo Tennis International Tournaments. So we look forward to having Dr. Steve come and join our network. Those of you that are interested in joining our network as hosts in the future, I ask that you write to me and we can start talking about it. It's as simple as writing a J. Haynes, H-A-Y-N-E-S, the number 10, the letter S, @gmail.com. Again, that's jhaynes, H-A-Y-N-E-S, the number 10, the letter S, @gmail.com. And be glad to talk to you about what it takes to talk to our guests each week, bring in guests each week to talk about them, and would love to visit with you about it. So we've got on today's show, we've got the NCAA Division I men's tennis champion, head coach Brian Bolin. Brian will be joining us shortly here on air, and we'll get to him in just a little bit. First things first, I wanted to let you know that the ITA is still undergoing some shuffling over there, trying to get the right people in line for the upcoming year. As you know, Tim Russell, the ITA CEO, is replacing some of the previous ITA staff as Angel Prinos went and joined the University of Pennsylvania Athletic Department. And just a couple of days ago, yesterday as a matter of fact, Erica Perkins Jasper was appointed the new Chief Operating Officer of the Intercollegiate Tennis Association, and her role is set to begin on July 5th, 2015. Some of you may recognize Erica. She just completed 3 years as the head women's coach at the University of New Mexico. She served as tennis coaches at several universities, including Michigan State, the College of William & Mary, and also Georgia Southern University. She's going to go over to the ITA and become their new chief operating officer. She's going to replace Angel Prinos. And so we're looking excited to the new changes that are going on at the ITA and see what happens over there, see if they can get some of this stuff ironed out in regards to the scoring system and the rankings and things of that nature, the small college, getting small colleges involved and even more upper-level college experiences. So we're looking for Coach Brian Bolin to come on. Sorry, it's taking him just a little while to get here. Back to Erica. She says that her passion for college tennis is calling me to serve the sport that has provided so much for me. I'm thankful for this opportunity for me and my family. She's absolutely the perfect person to join our team in this important role. Her extensive experience as a successful coach, a leader of the ITA, and as well as a proven administrator with the USTA makes her an ideal partner, as we together will work tirelessly on behalf of college tennis to move our sport forward. As many of you know, this is troubling and rewarding at the same time. We're glad that the ITA has decided to add some new blood to their mix, but we're not so excited that she's coming from the USTA. We think the USTA probably needs to stay out of college tennis personally and stick with its ramping up of tennis in other areas, but we're not quite sure if that'll hold true. Let's see here. Okay, still no Brian Bolin. I apologize here, people. I know he's supposed to be coming on today. So let's see if I can get something here to fill the airwaves until Coach Bolin comes on the air. We're looking for him today. Supposed to be here at 1 o'clock Central Time. We are now at 1:09 and waiting for him to come in. So let me very quickly see if we can hold on there, people. I know that you don't want to hear me talk the whole time. Hang in there, people. So Coach Boland's going to come to us here shortly. He had a wonderful, successful season there, University of Virginia. They were the men's NCAA national champion. Quite the successful season. Let's see here if I can bring you some other college news. Talk about Angel Prinos and see where she went to. Angel Prinos, who's been the Associate Director and Chief Operating Officer of the Intercollegiate Tennis Association, has been appointed the Senior Associate Athletic Director at the University of Pennsylvania. She begins her new role at Penn on August 1st after 14 years of outstanding service with the ITA. Prino started the ITA fall of 2001, focusing on the ITA awards and outreach program, and had her role expanded after only a few weeks to include oversight of all ITA events and championships, as well as helping with the ITA rankings program. So I've got Coach Boland calling in at the wrong number. Let me see here. Okay, I think we've got this worked out. Should be any moment here that Coach Boland's calling in, so just hang in there, people. Hang in there with me. I apologize for the tardiness today. I was expecting him to be here at 5 after, so we're just running just a little bit late today. So hang in there, people. There he is, I believe. Coach Brian Boland, let's see if I can bring him in.
Hi, Jay, this is Brian.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Jay. Sorry about that. I somehow had the wrong number. My apologies.
That's all right. It happens. Joys of live radio whenever you expect someone to be there or not. We got to fill the air, so no worries. I want to welcome you to today's show. As many of my guests or as many of my listeners know, I try to have on each of the collegiate coaches that have won their respective NCAA or NJCAA or NAIA championship in the course of the year. You were on our show a couple of years ago after you'd won. Did you expect to come back on so soon, Coach?
Well, I appreciate you having me, and you know, it's not really something that you ever expect or not. We just try to give ourselves a chance every single year that we go out and compete. And fortunately for the Virginia Cavaliers, we were able to win another national championship this year. But every year is a new challenge.
No, exactly. And this year, no different than the others. I doubt that at the beginning of the year you set upon yourself to say we're going to win the national championship this year. It was probably a process that you went through kind of building as you went along and saw some good things out of your players as you went through there. You had a busy fall schedule. You had 5 events, but what I like about your fall schedule is you play most of those events at home, Coach.
Yeah, we did. And, you know, we had a number of great challenges during the fall, including mixing in some futures and challengers, and then as well as the ITA national event. So we did get off to a great start, and I think, you know, we're able to get each player a large number of matches and preparing for the spring season. So certainly that was beneficial to us.
Hey, Coach, your fall season, you mentioned there that you put in some futures and some challengers for your kids. running one of the top programs in the United States. Is that important for these kids to see some of that type of play?
I don't think there's any question. You know, for us, it's making sure that our players have a number of matches playing against competition that is better than them, that's fairly even with them, and then some of their kind of expected to come through. So we're trying to get a diverse schedule in terms of the competition, and that means that I believe in our case we're going to need to fill some holes with some futures and challengers. And, you know, we believe so much in the college game and the level in which it's played. You know, there's a number of players that currently play college tennis that compete at that level and do quite well. We've had a number of players over the years make it all the way through to the final of a 50 or 75 or a quarter or semi, and then, of course, do well in the futures events. And a number of players win futures events. So college tennis is played at a high level, but mixing that in and exposing them to, you know, some of the minor league events, I think, is important. And then occasionally we'll get a player that has the opportunity to even play at the highest level. So that's always exciting. But, you know, I think college tennis just keeps getting better and better, and that's a tribute to a lot of people out there doing a great job.
Well, Coach, there's no doubt about it that your program seems to be attracting some of the top American players. It's taken you, what, 14 years to get to this point where you're in the University of Virginia are able to attract these players so far?
Well, I think we've had some success, which I think is a tribute to UVA and what it has to offer. Early on in my career, we brought in some top Americans back in 2002 and 2003, and, you know, it's steadily improved throughout the years. But, you know, from the minute I stepped on grounds back in 2001 and accepted the job at UVA, I always believed this was a diamond in the rough and a place that could, you know, compete for ACC and national championships and bring in the best and brightest Americans to go through this experience. And fortunately for us, we've had a number of players come through here that have gone on to succeed on the professional tour and had great college careers, and more importantly, have done very well once the tennis careers were over. So I think UVA, it's a tribute to the school, what they have to offer, you know, academically, athletically, socially, and just the whole atmosphere is very positive. So I've been blessed to work at a school and surround myself with some amazing coaches and players, and it's been a great journey.
Coach, are you having to turn away some of America's top talent, or are they choosing other schools, or how does that work for you and your program?
Well, it varies year by year. I mean, some years you have a few more opportunities than others. So if there's a young man where the finances don't work for them, then obviously we have to pass simply because of the limitations. But fortunately for us, we've been able to, I mean, for the most part, compete for the players that we have been interested in, and then they've shown a lot of interest in us through the years. But, yes, certainly there are years that we have less opportunity. This year we only graduated one player in Mitchell Frank. Obviously some big shoes to fill there. He's had an unbelievable career from Northern Virginia. But with that being said, you know, more of a limited opportunity this year with only one senior than maybe other years where you might have three or four.
Yeah, now the thing I like about your roster is it's inundated with a lot with American players, but you do have some internationals mixed in there. How hard is it for you to sign these international players, Coach? I mean, you've got to have some great internationals to play with these great Americans.
Yeah, for sure. I don't spend a great deal of time recruiting international players. We've had a few recently be interested in us. The most recent one was Alexander Richard, who grew up in the United States and actually has a home in Miami and is a U.S. citizen. So he's on our roster and certainly is a great player and had a lot of success in futures and in international junior tennis before arriving and playing in the top six this past year. And then outside of that, we had a young man by the name of Johnny Cornish from England who looked at a bunch of Ivy League schools and decided he wanted to attend Virginia and walk on. And he's been a great addition to our roster, just a wonderful young man. But predominantly my focus has been the players in our backyard. And fortunately for us, we've been able to, you know, get a number of high-level Northern Virginia kids and players from the Mid-Atlantic to attend UVA over the last decade. And that's a tribute to so many great academies you know, in this area, starting with College Park, who's done a marvelous job with some juniors over the years, and Mitchell Frank, and has been there in training over the last several years prior to coming to UVA, and there's been a number of others as well, the Four Star Academy, and just a number of great coaches in the Mid-Atlantic that have done some great work with these young kids. Vesa Ponk, obviously, up in College Park, Frank Salazar, you know, Steve McGill over in Four Seasons, Four Star, they've done such good work. Bob Pass, so many great coaches that have done a marvelous job mentoring and developing these young juniors, and we've been blessed to bring them in and hope to bring them to another level.
Yeah, it's fortunate you've become somewhat of a magnet there on the East Coast to bring in some of these top American players. Your coaching philosophy, Coach, whenever you start to build this program, has it changed through the years, or what is your coaching philosophy with these kids?
Well, obviously, I think you have to constantly be adapting and adjusting and learning new things as you go along. I mean, each year is its own challenge. But the way we kind of go about things here is to focus on the welfare of the player and the development first and foremost, in terms of making sure that you know, they make good decisions off the court, that they have a sound base, that they're doing things the right way to make sure that they're happy and that they're making good decisions off the court, and that their, you know, their emotions and everything else are in check, so when they get on the court, they have a real great deal of clarity, and they're ready to focus and work. And, you know, we try to run our program with some team practices, but also spending a great deal of time on the individual games of each player, what it is they need, what is their identity, and to make sure that they own that and they understand that and continue to work on it and master it. And then their game will evolve around those things. So we just want to make sure that we give every player the opportunity to develop, you know, physically, emotionally, mentally, and have an opportunity to not only play a high level of college tennis, but we have predominantly our roster is full of young men who want to play professional tennis, and we want to do everything we can and attend to every detail to provide them the best opportunity to be prepared upon their departure from UVA, and that's something we focus really hard on, and that's why I brought a number of assistants in over the years. Andres Pedroso, who, you know, played at Duke and was an All-American there and then went on and played on the professional tour. The same goes for Dustin Taylor. Both were with the USTA prior to coming here. Scott Brown, who just took a job in College Park, I believe is one of the best coaches in the country and was with us for 5 years until he went up there and started actually this last week. So we've had a lot of coaches who have been through that process, understand it, and have a great desire to provide these young men the best opportunity for development.
Coach, you seem to be attracting the right players for the University of Virginia college experience. I'm curious, as you approach this, is it a team sport with individual opportunities, or an individual sport with the team opportunity?
Well, I think naturally it's an individual sport with team opportunities. And the great thing about team, and I've said this to a number of my players over the years, and I think that's what makes college tennis so special, is I believe everyone's obviously better with great people around them that care about them. I don't think anyone gets out of bed 365 days a year and does anything maximum level by themselves. And, you know, if you look at all the success stories in the professional game over the years, all of those top players have teams, and, you know, whether it's physios or personal assistants, coaches, et cetera, they surround themselves with a team. Now, fortunately for them, they have the resources and finances to do it, such as just like we do at the college game with all these great colleges around the country. So I always believe that you maximize yourself and develop more when you play for something bigger than yourselves, and that's what makes it so special for these guys. And I've never been a believer that, you know, it's about selfishness. You hear that oftentimes when young people are being developed, that if you don't want to do it, then don't bother, or, you know, you have to be somewhat selfish and so on. I just think that's a cop-out. I don't believe in that. I think the unselfishness really is an approach to development that we need to focus on, not only at the collegiate level, but professionally as well. And I think if you could surround yourself with a team, you're always going to be better, and you're going to develop more, and you're going to find it within you on those days that just seem so difficult to pull it out of you, when you have people that really care about you and work day in and day out to make you the best you can be. And said it to the players many times over the years that everyone has days where they just don't want to be there, and those are the days you have to find it. And oftentimes, you know, reaching and digging deep for your teammates, your friends, your coaches, your university, I think really allows these young men to understand that that's what life's all about.
Is it that unselfish attitude that allows those teams to be successful, Coach? I mean, is that the key component?
Well, I think it's huge. I don't think there's any question that you need to have a culture and a group of men that really are buy into, you know, caring about each other and taking on the journey together and being unselfish in the process. And you know, you feel an obligation every day you step on the court, and everything you say and everything you do, and how it affects you know, your teammates and yourself. You know, and it's such a responsibility and obligation that you know these young men have. And the great thing about this past year's team and our run to the national championship is we certainly had a high level of skill on the team, but you know, talent can only bring you so far. And fortunately for us, we had great leadership in the peer group with Mitchell Frank, and we had a bunch of men who really bought into the culture and really cared about each other and wanted to play whatever role that was necessary for the team to have success to the best of their ability. And I really enjoyed this past year. What a great journey it was, and it's a tribute to them, you know, buying into the discipline of the culture, the competitiveness, the unselfishness, and the desire to, as I keep saying, to play for something bigger than yourself. I don't think there's anything better. You know, if you work for any organization in this country or whatever it is you do, you represent the university and you can wear that brand with pride and be proud, that's a pretty special deal. And, you know, if you're whatever it is, if you're working for Nike and you put that swoosh on, you're pretty proud. One of the things I know and certain of, when these young men put the orange and blue on and wear the B Saber, they do it with a lot of pride.
Yeah, and everything worked well this year. Everything came together. I mean, you were rewarded and awarded many, many, many awards from the NCAA. You had the NCAA singles champion and the highest ranked American. You got the Rookie of the Year, the most outstanding tournament player. You ended up with 4 All-Americans. Coach, I would say this was a successful year.
I think it was on many fronts, not just the results. There was a lot of great things that happened within the program, and the results took care of themselves. Like I said, these guys really had growth mindsets, process-oriented, loved the culture and each other, and just the journey was amazing. And so I wasn't particularly surprised at the end of the results, because they were willing to lose together early on in the season when we had some struggles and lost to Baylor twice and Oklahoma. And we were sitting at 9-3, which was a bit unprecedented for the University of Virginia over the last decade, that early in the season. And unfortunately for them, they just, you know, they were willing to be uncomfortable and realize it was a process and it was going to take some time. And the fact that they really managed losing together so well gave me a great feeling that they were going to continue to work and win together. So, again, you know, I wasn't particularly surprised at the results, but at the same time, when a bunch of young men do it the right way and they stick to it day in and day out and they face adversity as well as this group did, you're just happy to see them get rewarded. I mean, that's one of the great joys of coaching, is you have these relationships and these young men work together and they work so hard for the program day in and day out and for one another, and they get rewarded. And it doesn't, you know, you may do things the right way, and it doesn't always work that way. You know, I've had other seasons over the years where I really believe the team did some incredible things. I can remember back in 08 when Sumda Devarman was our team captain and really felt that group of guys deserved it and did things the right way and had the right outlook and really process-oriented, very open-minded, and so on. But it didn't work out. We lost in the Final Four, and that's happened a number of times. But in this case, it worked out. These young men were rewarded, and and I'm really happy for them. It's much deserved.
Coach, was there a particular time in the season that you thought that there might be something special happening with this group of kids?
I did. I thought when we lost to Baylor at National Indoors, it just seemed that the team afterwards really, they just had the right outlook. The chemistry felt right. The leadership within the team was extremely positive. They could lose together. They could handle adversity together. And, you know, I've always believed that if you want to win together, you have to know who you can lose with. And, you know, we so often in our quick fix society and culture, the minute something doesn't go our way, we start heading to the tunnel and run away rather than facing the fire and working together through that adversity. And this group had no problem doing that. They just suffered together and embraced it and kept working and said all the right things and most importantly, did all the right things. So it was a great, you know, I've been doing this, starting 20 years as a head coach, and this would have ranked amongst one of my most enjoyable years just because of the young men that I worked with and the way they went about it, regardless of the results. I mean, obviously the results make everyone feel rewarded for the approach, but at the same time, like I said, you can do things the right way and you don't always get rewarded, and that's why you just have to keep plugging away and believe in the philosophy, believe in the approach that you're taking and stick to the process.
Coach, your last bump in the road was a 4-3 loss to the University of Oklahoma back in March. Then you went on a tear. You didn't lose another match the rest of the season. I mean, there were some close ones there, when I say close 4-2 a couple of times. But you guys really got serious after the ITA Indoors and then that loss to Oklahoma. I guess momentum is a big part of what happened here. You know, and I guess I got to ask, I mean, how did you maintain the momentum as you went along through that?
Well, again, I think the momentum started early with the way the team prepared in the fall and did the preseason training and took some bumps early on and really still continued to believe in what we were doing and how we were doing it and knew that our best tennis was ahead. And then once the train started moving, there was no stopping. And even through some injuries and some difficulty from a health standpoint throughout that time, everyone on the roster was prepared. So even when our regular starters weren't able to play, our depth came in and performed and played their role, and everybody was ready when their name was called and prepared for the opportunity, and that's something we talked a great deal about. So just being prepared for whatever was thrown at us. You know, in the ACC championship, we lost Mitchell Frank, and he had some back spasm. We weren't able to play him. And, you know, some others that were deeper in the lineup stepped in and were ready to go and performed at a high level. And everybody that had to move up in the lineup did the same. And, you know, Wake Forest had a great year and was an outstanding team. One of my former assistants and now the head coach there. And proud of what Tony has been able to do and continues to do.
Yeah, as the season went along, you're playing towards that NCAA championship. Coach, you started out with the NCAA championship run against St. John's, Minnesota, Columbia, Texas A&M. You were all 4-0 in each of those. You didn't lose a match. What was the key, the doubles in each of those?
Well, it's interesting. I think one of the things that really helped us, Jay, is St. John's opening with, again, I have so much respect for the depth of college tennis. That was not, you know, that was a strong team, and they gave us a good match after being laid off for a couple weeks because of the conference championships and exams and the delay between conference and the NCAA. So felt like we had a really good match against St. John's. Our doubles was as strong as it's ever been, and that was one of the keys to our success all year long, particularly when the momentum went our way. It's really started going our way from the loss to Oklahoma for the rest of the season. We just had a really strong doubles point, certainly one of the best in the country. And then Minnesota. I mean, there were moments during the Minnesota match where they were, you know, they had a great year. They were Big Ten champs in the regular season and a really, really strong team that pushed us. And, you know, there were some times during that match where adversity was faced and the guys handled it well, and then on to Colombia, another great match. That, you know, same thing. You know, it looks like 4-0, but 4-0 isn't always a representative of how close those matches are. They were, without question, belonged in the Sweet 16. I was not at all surprised that Colombia advanced into the final site. And then, of course, A&M, who won the SECs and had a great year. That was probably when we really started the peak, I would say, against A&M. We played about as good a match as we could have played, and that continued for the rest of the tournament, because having to play Baylor after losing to them twice in the regular season, again at home in Waco, in front of their home fans and their courts and their, what's familiar for them, and losing the doubles point in a tiebreaker when we were way up in the doubles point, and then coming back and winning the match 4-2, I knew that's when we had really peaked at the right time. And it really started at A&M. You know, I think A&M was our cleanest and best match we played maybe all year. It wasn't really that close. And I think that's more of a credit to our players than it was to them, because they're a very, very good team, had a great year. And then, of course, Oklahoma, we had lost to them during the regular season as well and came back and beat them in the national championship. So it was a tremendous run, and I really do feel like we peaked at the NCAAs and we got a little bit better with each match, but I really felt it in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, in order to get to the finals, I mean, you did have to beat a Baylor team that had beaten you twice before in the season, 4-3 and then a 5-2 match. Coach, how did you get your guys ready to go on that day, or was it pretty easy?
Well, they were ready to go at that point. Like I said, in the match before, we were really playing at a high level, and I think the team knew it and really believed that we were right where we needed to be. And despite, again, losing the doubles point, which we hadn't done for a long time up to that point, it really didn't faze the guys. I mean, I really believe from the minute we lost the doubles point, there wasn't really anyone on the team that thought we weren't going to get it done. We were just really in a good place. It's a lot of confidence. They had a real edge to them and really believed in themselves and one another. We were just in a great place, and it was a lot of fun. Now, credit to Baylor. I mean, whether we played our best or not, it was going to be a tough match. And as expected, I mean, it really did come down to the end. Mitchell Frank, again, pulling that match out at the end was really important because it was so close on his court. And Baylor really left it on the court. I mean, they have a great team, a veteran team, guys who had been there before and done it. So credit to Baylor. They had a great season, and I'm sure it was hard for them to lose at home. But our guys were ready to go. And then, of course, that momentum carried all the way through the national championship against Oklahoma, who, you know, had a really good match like we did in the semifinals. So both teams, both Oklahoma and ourselves, had a really competitive match in the semis, Oklahoma beating TCU 4-3. And, you know, they had an incredible year, and the job John Roddick has done is remarkable in 6 short seasons. So I know it's been tough for him to lose 2 national championships in a row, but, you know, their time will come. I've been there. I know what that's like, and you always feel for them, but I'm sure, certainly happy for my guys.
Yeah, against Oklahoma now, Coach, you won the doubles point. That had to have made the day go just a little bit easier, and I say that with the emphasis on little bit easier.
Yeah, I would emphasize a little, because it was 17 times during the regular season that Oklahoma had lost the doubles point, which is unbelievable for the level of their team. I thought it was closer to 12 or 13, but at the I read something at the end of the year that said they lost it something like 17 times. That's unbelievable, and it says a lot about them. It really just doesn't faze them. They know how to play, whether they win or lose the doubles. Quite frankly, I thought they had some good doubles, and we played maybe some of our best doubles during that match that we played all year. So we ended up really sweeping the doubles, because 2 and 3 doubles finished at the exact same time, which gave us a tremendous momentum going into singles. But even then, there were moments in the singles where the momentum was slowly starting to shift. And, if, you know, Mitchell had gone to a third set and not clinched it. It was obviously getting really, really interesting, as it always does. It's what makes college tennis so interesting. You know, at number one singles, Ryan, who had an incredible year, was struggling. At number one, he had broken to go back on serve at 5-all. when we were up 3-1, and then the start of the third at number six. So with those three matches on, that last point wasn't going to come easy. So fortunately, Mitchell, as he always seems to find a way to do it, he pulled through. I mean, what a warrior that kid is. He'll be so missed in an orange and blue uniform.
Yeah, Coach, this guy did it not just once for you, and I mean, this guy did it for you several times in the course of his experience there at the University of Virginia. He's your only senior that you lose. How important of a piece is this guy?
Well, he's huge in terms of the presence he brings day in and day out to matches and practice. I mean, he's a guy's work ethic, his passion and love for the game is something that you probably only get a chance to coach once in your life. I mean, he absolutely loves the game, and he loves everything there is about tennis. And so I'm excited. Mitchell's had aspirations to play on the professional tour, and he's going to start here in about 2 weeks. He needed to rest and take care of his body after the NCAAs, and so he's going to begin his career in early July. And it will be exciting to see how he does. But we're going to miss him. I mean, he was a great leader for us in his senior year, someone who obviously was a clutch player in the biggest moments in college tennis, which quite frankly I think are as big a moment as anyone's ever going to play in the sport outside of maybe, you know, playing in some of the slams. You know, the comparison between the big moments and the pressure that goes along with college tennis compared to futures and challengers, quite frankly, it's really tough out there in the college game in terms of the pressure that these kids face, which I really believe is only good for them when they're trying to ultimately make a living on the ATP Tour. So I think it really does prepare them in a positive way in terms of the adversity and pressure they face, and the fact that, you know, they're playing in front of fairly large crowds, and I think that's only going to increase as college tennis continues to grow and become more popular in the years to come. I think we're heading in the right direction. I'm excited about the next 5 to 10 years of what college tennis can do in this country for young people, and also the success they can have upon leaving college, because I truly believe in the process and how much they can develop in some of these programs who are doing it the right way, and the pressures and adversity and discipline and focus that these kids are able to attain during their years in college before they get on the tour. It's tough, I think, to emulate what the kind of pressure you face at the highest level of pro tennis in futures tournaments. In fact, we just hosted one here at UVA last week, and it's just a different feeling. I just don't feel that it can prepare you as well as some of the biggest moments of the college game. And I think John Isner and Kevin Anderson and Benjamin Becker and Stevie Johnson and the list goes on and on would tell you the same thing. And I really believe in the college developmental system.
Well, and that's something that you've been able to accomplish there at the University of Virginia. I mean, if you're winning it every other year, Coach, every 2 or 3 years, that puts your school on the map as far as, you know, these juniors that are looking to play pro tennis. It seems like that you've put yourself in an outstanding position to gather these players up.
Well, you know, I do believe that it is about environment and culture. And, you know, when these young men can come to a school, Ryan Shane's a great example. He came here. He started at the bottom of the mountain. He was our number 7 singles player as a freshman, did not play in the team national championship in 2013, found his way into the lineup on a regular basis his second year. And then, of course, this year played number 1 singles at the end and won a national championship. Sandra Varman did a very similar thing when he was a freshman. He played 3 and some 2 and worked his way into winning a couple national singles championships and so on. So, you know, Dom Englott and so many others. So I have a lot of belief that these young men can come in. They start at the bottom part of the climb, and they work their way up, and they're pushed. They're in a great culture. They see a big ball day in and day out in practice. And at the same time, we are really trying to focus on what they need individually as a coaching staff. So they make sure that we make sure that they're able to work on the identity they need to have to be successful in their development. But at the same time, they're seeing a diverse group of players that play different styles that can play at a high level. and they see a big ball. I mean, we've got guys on our team over the years that, you know, can serve at 130 and 135 or plus and hit as big a ball as anyone in the world. And then a lot of finesse players who will push you around the court. You know, and we've had a number of those, and certainly a backboard like Mitchell Frank who can make it tough for you. So, you know, when the practices are surrounded around competition and the individuals are working on one's, you know, individual development and identity, I think it's a great combination. And then, of course, all the other resources that a college like ours has to offer in terms of a full-time strength coach and trainer and physio and the facilities and the travel and the environment and the competition and the diversity of the competition, throwing in some futures and challengers. I find it hard to believe anybody would want to turn it down, at least for some period of time, in terms of the opportunity to develop and be around some peers that can really get the most out of them. Like I said, I think when you're in a competitive environment and you're in a great culture and you play for something bigger than yourself, you're going to find out how good you can be.
I wouldn't deny that, Coach. You took a 3-1 lead there at your national championship day. You won in straight sets. You had a couple of big breaks to serve. What made it extra special on the day when you won that point? When you won the championship over Oklahoma?
Well, I think anytime you can win a national championship, it's going to be a special day. But I thought, for us, after losing Oklahoma earlier in the season, you know, John Roddick and I are very close colleagues and friends in college tennis, and we often talked about the possibility that we would play against each other in the national championship this year, and it ended up happening. Both teams that respect one another. We had a great match with them earlier in the year, and then to play our best tennis in our last match, you know, it all just came together. And then more icing on the cake to have our senior, our only senior, and Mitchell Frank clinch the match for us in the last team match he ever played in the orange and blue. Pretty special day to be a Virginia Cavalier. So not a lot you could say that we didn't see happen that day that we didn't want to. It was everything and more we could have dreamed of. And I know the players are really anticipating this summer in terms of their tournaments and training, and then getting after it again next year. We have an exciting, maybe our best schedule we've put together in over 10 years. I'm just thrilled about the competition that we have on the docket for next year. We're hosting national team indoors. We have a number of the top programs coming in for dual matches, including UCLA on the West Coast and others. And then we're going to have a chance to play in Tulsa, who's hosting the NCAAs next year. And then our fall schedule, again, is full of diverse tournaments from challengers, which we're hosting, to futures. And then, of course, a number of top collegiate events. The one that they're doing out in Malibu with Oracle is very exciting. We're involved in that with 3 or 4 players. They're inviting the top 16 or so players in the country out there. And you know, I think that's going to be some seriously high-level tennis for the guys. So a lot of things have shaped up in anticipation of the coming year after this last match against Oklahoma. And then Ryan Shane, of course, winning the NCAA singles championship. What a great story that is. And I'm just so happy and thrilled for him. He really, really did it the right way and has put his time in. And it's exciting to see what Ryan did this year. And what's even more exciting is what Ryan's future holds. He's got a lot to look forward to, and we're excited for him.
Coach, with that singles championship, there really wasn't a day off for you at the national championship. You had to coach almost every single day.
Yeah, well, that's something that's pretty unique in college tennis, that tournament is long, and you have to go in with the mindset that, you know, it's going to go on for a couple of weeks, and you face that, and you deal with a lot of ups and downs and adversity and so on. But, yeah, so, you know, it makes it tough for the players that play throughout the entire team tournament. Some would say it's an advantage because you're on the courts and you're playing, but, you know, to play all the way to the end, 4 tough matches in the final site, and then the next day to go out there and do what Ryan did is not easy to do. So, yeah, I would you know, I would say that's something I know college tennis is looking at changing. There's a lot of talk about possibly playing the individual event in the fall, possibly, or doing something to, you know, change the way that event is put together. And I do think there's some things that we can do a lot better. And of course, Tim Russell's the new head of the ITA, and I saw Erica Perkins was hired yesterday as the CEO. There's a lot of, I think, positive energy that's going to come from that, and we'll see where it goes. But it's an exciting time for college tennis, and I think the best is in front of all of us.
You know, very good. Coach, I got a couple of quick questions I wanted to ask you before I let you go today. As you've gone through this and your teams have changed, they've gotten better. Who are your rivals now, Coach? Who do you enjoy putting on the schedule and looking at?
Well, we've tried to continue our dual matches with Oklahoma. I think that's something that it's a healthy rivalry. And then, of course, within the ACC, Duke and North Carolina and Wake Forest, they're always good. And certainly we try to, play a number of teams or at least as many as we can that we believe we might see in the end. I wouldn't say that we have a direct rival. There are some teams in the ACC that we played over the years and had a lot of success in the ACC that have really made for some great matches. But on a national level, we've really turned into quite a match, I guess, a home and away with Oklahoma over the years that has become quite exciting.
Coach, you've played several different formats through the course of the year. Were you a fan of the format changes? Would you like to see a little more uniformity, or what's your opinion on all that?
You know, I think our biggest focus needs to be on how we're going to deal with the final site, the biggest stage of college tennis, and that's something that I've always been really, focused on and believe that needs to be the primary a job of the ITA and the NTA right now, is to not so much be consumed by how the score is kept, but, you know, how can we have a better national championship? Because one of the reasons amongst many that NOAD scoring has been pushed is due to the fact that, you know, we don't feel that we're maximizing the number of fans that can come. And one of the reasons we believe that is because of how long the matches take. And I would say, the biggest reason that we struggle with maximizing our fan base, although there are times it's pretty incredible at some of these schools, and QVA does particularly a good job of filling the stands, but is the timing of the matches. You know, you look at the best example I have again, and I'll say it over and over, as long as you're going to have 32 teams at the final site, you're going to end up playing matches at times that just are not conducive with people's work schedules in life. And, you know, if you're going to play matches at 1 o'clock on a Monday in a Final Four against Baylor, you're not going to have the kind of attendance. Although it was great, quite frankly, I don't think there would be a seat empty in that entire stadium, which, by the way, is beautiful, the Hurd Tennis Center, if you play at 6 o'clock on a Friday or Saturday night. So for me, I just can't imagine a sport that has the potential we do and to draw fans and create excitement, and particularly in college tennis with the team involved. And the incredible brands that we have, you know, when you have a Virginia playing in Oklahoma, those are two big brands in this country, and that brings an extra element to it for fans, maybe non-tennis fans, but we can't be playing at 1 o'clock for a national championship, on a Tuesday, and 1 o'clock for a Final Four on Monday. That's our biggest problem, and the only way to do that is to really focus on the final site. You know, again, if the NFL had a great regular season, but their Super Bowl was overcrowded with teams and playing at 1 o'clock on a Monday, it wouldn't be the same thing. And so we just need to do a better job putting first things first. And to me, it's how are we going to deal with our final site issue and put ourselves in the best possible position to showcase our sport in prime time with the best preparation and organization in the best site possible where people can get excited about it. And look at what baseball has done in Omaha. It's so special. You know, they've built that brand. They promoted it. The town and the city has been excited about it, and they play in prime time. And I like the fact that baseball now is the only show in town this late in the year, which is something I think tennis needs to think about. Could we extend a little bit into June? And therefore, you know, and start a little bit later, we'll play more outdoor tennis than for some of the northern schools, and we'll be in prime time when there's not as many schools that are still in session. I mean, you feel bad for those schools. We're not one of them, but they're still in school, and they're at the NCAAs for 2 weeks. So we have a lot of issues there that I think the IPA needs to really focus on, and the format, I think, comes second. I think we've kind of put the cart before the horse on that one.
It seems like that they're trying to put the fans before the players, Coach. Do you get that feeling?
Well, you know what? I think they can go together. I think it could be a win-win. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because we do need to consider the fans in tennis. And the reason is, I mean, here we are. Last week, I'm at a futures event. There's probably 15 fans in the stands, and we have one of the players yelling at the 10 of them, you know, that they're talking. And so I think we need to find a balance where players become a little less, little bit more flexible and respect the fans that are there so we don't lose any of them. And the fans need to be put in positions where they can enjoy the match. Again, I'm not being critical of baseball, but, when I go to the ballpark, I don't exactly find baseball the most exciting sport to watch, but they do a great job making it a great event, which only is going to enhance the player or student-athlete experience. I mean, again, focus on what's going on in Omaha right now, and it's remarkable. College tennis has the same opportunity with incredible leadership and a vision to create something really special in prime time in using all our resources in this country to make it unique. And I think we're on the right track. There's a lot of work to be done. So it'll be interesting as we move into the next, years to come with the ITA and the NCAA, and some of these things are starting to resonate with people. I wouldn't say that we put I would not say that we're putting the fans above the student athlete. I do think that both can be a win-win for both, and I really think professional tennis needs to consider some of the things they can do as well, because going to some of the challengers and futures ATP events over the summer months and around this country and around the world, we can just do a lot better job in tennis in general with the right vision and leadership and enthusiasm and work ethic and so on. I think the future's bright, but there's a ton of work to be done, and certainly collegiate tennis is no different. There is a lot of work ahead of us.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, Coach. Listen, Brian, I want to thank you for coming on the air today and spending some time with us and letting my people know about your national championship run.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Sorry for the little delay there. I was calling the wrong number. But I appreciate you having me, and thanks for promoting this great sport.
Yeah, I look forward to having you all on again next year, Coach.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Take care.
All right. Take care of yourself. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Head Coach Brian Bolin, the NCAA Division I Men's Tennis Champion, not only team championship, but he was able to win the individual, if you caught that as well. His player Ryan Shane won the NCAA singles format as well. So he had a very successful year out there at the University of Virginia, and looking forward to, as I mentioned, him coming back next year, as I do with all my college coaches. And I want to remind you that we'll be back here next week. We've got another successful college coach on the air, and we'll be bringing him in. Sorry, I forgot my calendar. I can't tell you who it is right off the bat, but bring him in next week, and hopefully you'll get outside and hit some tennis balls this week if you can. I know the weather's been a little bit conducive here in Texas to where we're not getting in as many tennis balls as we'd like on the year. Hopefully you're getting out there as much as you can. So thanks for listening in today. Bye-bye.